the M&A Zing, the weekly podcast for acquisition entrepreneurs, holdco builders and search fund investors in the UK, Europe and beyond. I'm your host, Gareth Hawkins, co-founder and CEO of BizCrunch. And today I am thrilled to introduce Jenna Hill, a serial entrepreneur who's turned the traditional M&A playbook completely upside down. In just 4 years, Jenna has built a portfolio of 8 businesses across Northern Ireland, from beauty salons to bridal boutiques to barber shops, all using what she calls her no money down acquisition strategy. And here's the kicker. She made her first acquisition at age 28, while 6 months pregnant with her third child and having 2 toddlers already at home. So rightly, she's since won dual awards as Young Businesswoman and Young Entrepreneur of the Year. And she's teaching others to replicate her success through her business buying blueprint program. Jenna is the self-described woman with a beauty salon and no beauty qualification. But her mission isn't about becoming an expert in every industry. It's about preserving legacies, keeping people employed and helping retiring business owners to find succession solutions when their families don't want to take over the business. So what an impactful philosophy, and one that she's building an ecosystem around with her own Small Business Fanatics podcast and community. And she's got her sights set on 11 businesses owned by the end of this year. So here we are in October, busy quarter ahead. Jenna, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. That is definitely the best intro I feel like I've ever had, Gareth. I'm going to bring you a bite with me a bit more often.
Oh, thank you. Well, no worries. Always happy to blow the trumpet. It helps to have a good researcher as well.
Very true.
Testament to our team more than anything. Great. Well, listen, you, as I mentioned in the intro, you've already acquired 8 businesses across Northern Ireland and you've got a goal to get to 11. What type of businesses are you particularly drawn to, and what's your thesis for choosing them?
I suppose for me, there's not a particular industry that I'm particularly drawn to. The biggest thing for me is looking for recession-resistant sectors. I don't believe that there is a recession-proof sector, but I do firmly believe we have recession-resistant sectors out there. This is something that individuals in the M&A space, particularly on LinkedIn, really don't like me saying, but I firmly stand by it. My experience says different. In the likes of hairdressers, beauty salons, barbershops, you will have men and women that won't miss £20 for a haircut if a recession actually hits. But if their partner was to say they were going to go and throw £3,000 off a handbag, they definitely would have a problem with it. So we have those recession-resistant sectors that tend to not be too badly impacted. And those are the ones that we're really looking towards. We're also looking towards the industries that are becoming more needs than wants. So one of the industries, the most recent acquisition that we had was for a cleaning company. And that's because we're seeing such a demand. The demand out there is absolutely exponential for home cleaning, never mind for commercial cleaning. So we are jumping onto the industries that we are seeing a big demand for. As well as that, we picked up the physiotherapy business that I am very happily outside today because the guys are fully booked and I couldn't get a room to do the podcast in, hence I'm hiding in my car.
That's a great KPI.
It's a really, really good problem to have, isn't it? But we're looking towards those sectors. You know, we know Gen Zs aren't drinking anywhere near what the likes of me as a millennial did in my early 20s. And we're looking really towards those sectors that are... we're going to make a few pound off that, realistically, guys. That's what we're actually looking for right now. So we're looking at the health and wellness sphere, and our physiotherapy business is combined with a small group personal training, and it is doing absolutely fantastic. So yeah, recession-resistant sectors and industries that we are seeing a bit of a boom in right now is firmly where I am setting my sights.
Beautiful. But pre-2021, this wasn't the world for you. You weren't a small business acquirer. So what did life look like for you before you took the foray into this world? What was your career prior to entering this?
Yes, so I was HR director in the second fastest growing care company in the UK. So I was firmly pottering about on planes, flying across over to England, down into the Republic, into Dublin and up in Belfast, working in domiciliary care, health and social care sector, absolutely booming sector again, and one that we are still setting our sights on and hopefully will pick up a business in the future. But I was HR director, so in around sort of 2,000 to 3,000 staff members at any one time. We were doing big growth, they were doing acquisitions as well, the sector's absolutely booming. And that's what my background was in, firmly HR. And it was whenever I was off on maternity leave that I thought, right, I am going to do something a little bit different and I'm going to try something new. My middle daughter, Isabella, so I have 3 kids currently. Annie is 8, Isabella is now 6, and Freddie is 3. Isabella was born in September 2019, and God bless her, she was born with a very rare metabolic condition called homocystinuria, HCU for short, so you don't need to remember that one. And basically she can't digest protein. She can't break down any form of protein. And if you can imagine, you know, already having one child that was a toddler and then having Isabella born, this was the brand new condition to us. We'd never heard anything about it. She was the first person diagnosed in 17 years. And I thought, life is going to have to change now. She has a lot of medications, a lot of hospital appointments, but also a lot of food has to be cooked from scratch. And, you know, you have to be very creative with her diet because she's only allowed 6 grams of protein a day. And I thought, this corporate life, 60 plus hour weeks, is just not going to work with this little one. So yeah, it was at that point that we realized something was going to have to change.
Nice. What an interesting catalyst. And is she doing okay?
She's doing absolutely fabulous. So she was the first person in 17 years to be diagnosed. Thankfully now, because of her, that medical condition has been added on to Children's Day 5 Heal Brick card here in Northern Ireland. And there's been a few children caught since, which is absolutely fantastic. But she's thriving now. And I firmly put that to, I now have a working arrangement in that I can work around her. So I'm at every school drop off. I will be on the school pick up today, take her to all her medical appointments. And we're very lucky that we've been able to have that lifestyle now because we started in this crazy world of band businesses.
Yeah, I won't call it freedom because it doesn't feel like freedom, but that ability to be able to manage the work-life balance is certainly one of the perks that comes from small business portfolio Absolutely. Acquisition and ownership, definitely. Well, that's great. And look, she's going to grow up getting her macros right. So there's an upside to this. Naturally, she's going to have really good dietary decisions.
She absolutely is. Let me tell you, the child has the absolute longest eyelashes and the best skin of anyone in my household. So she has an absolutely fantastic diet. It's hard for her. It is difficult. But thankfully, as you say, it's not freedom, but it's the flexibility to live life how you want to live it. And I can put my priorities where I need to put my priorities. And I get to be there and to help her on the day-to-day basis and don't have to then bring somebody else in to look after her. And that is what's really important to us right now.
Fabulous. So what's coming across strongly is EQ. And I guess having that large workforce to look after as an HR director, I guess, really sharpened that tool for you. How has that helped you in your small business acquisition journey, that high EQ that you have?
Do you know, I really think the two hardest parts of running a business are A, the marketing, and B, the people. Mm. I think everything else you can really learn. Whereas if you have experience in managing people and you understand marketing and the psychology behind marketing, then you really are flying, or as we would say here in Northern Ireland, you're on a pig's back. So that is definitely, that has been so helpful for me, and that has really pushed me on, and it's been an advantage 100%. I suppose in certain sectors, you know, if we're looking at sort of the domiciliary care side, if we're looking at health and social care, if we're looking at children's daycare, which are the industries that we're looking at right now, we don't even really need to worry about marketing as such. We can nearly set that one aside. So yeah, being able to look after people, understand emotions, understand how to navigate individuals and situations as they arise, and get the best out of people is definitely the biggest strength and the biggest skill set that I have been able to develop. And that's definitely stood the test of time in this crazy journey.
Yeah, and it's a huge benefit, I think, having that ability to get the best from people and deploy them where their strengths and skills and joy comes from. I completely agree. That's a game changer. So when you're looking at business and you're making your selection, and I must imagine you have quite a lot of inbound opportunities now that you're out there and you've got a fair few under your belt. There must be quite a few people that are interested in having a conversation. How do you triage and make your decision as to which ones are right for you?
So before I will even walk over the threshold of my front doorstep, a business has to have three things. So it absolutely has to be profitable. I am not in the industry of buying do-uppers, so to speak. I am really looking for something that is already profitable and is already well-established, solid, good systems and processes in place. We are looking for businesses in which all the staff are going to stay on. Granted, we know sellers will depart, but we want a business where the remaining staff members are going to be in place, give or take one or two. Obviously, that's a given. And it has to be over 5 years old. We really are looking for something that is firmly established, a part of the community, and in certain sectors, actually, are community-based businesses. You know, if we're looking at certain industries, parents will have went to that business, their children then go to that business, and it really is a part of the local community, and we want to continue that on. That is a big thing for us, that we want to continue the legacy of individuals.
Nice. And that legacy, that keeping those legacies alive, protecting jobs, that really comes across strongly in all your messaging. Why is that such an important mission for you?
Funny, I actually had a bit of a debate with someone on LinkedIn recently, because in the M&A space, and especially with larger business acquisitions, it's nearly frowned upon to say that you want to keep a business owner's legacy alive. It's nearly seen as a marketing tactic. For me, it's absolutely not a marketing tactic. It couldn't be further from a marketing tactic. I believe wholeheartedly that if someone has created a business, grown that from the ground up, that is something that needs to be, you know, it needs to be celebrated. It's absolutely phenomenal that they've been able to do that. And I want to continue their legacy on. A lot of the times we're not having to start new things. We're not having to invent new things. We need to keep doing what has always been done, but maybe then start to introduce different aspects. So we might introduce, you know, aspects of AI. We might introduce technology to the business. There's advancements that we 100% can make, but legacy is so important to me. And I really think of business owners. One gentleman we were speaking to recently, bless him, he'd lost his son, and his son was always destined to carry on the business. The son worked in the business, and that was just what was going to happen. And he had sadly lost his son before he should have. And, you know, it was so heartbreaking for him that his son now wasn't going to keep that business on. And thankfully, we're working through that process with him, and we might be able to keep that legacy alive for him. And I think the further up that people get in the M&A game, they nearly forget that. They nearly lose the emotional side of this. And for a lot of these individuals, their business has been an additional child for them. It's grown up with them. It's grown up with their kids. Their kids have been a part of it. And I don't think we can underestimate that. So yeah, legacy is hugely important for me. And it's something I think of in pretty much all the big decisions I make. I think of my own legacy and what I want to leave for my children and for the community around me and for the individuals that I work with and I teach how to buy a business. I want to keep that legacy alive for them, and I want to make sure I'm leaving the right legacy for them.
Yeah, very, very strong differentiator, I should imagine, because, you know, it doesn't sound in any of that it's like about the money. It feels like it's about the mission and it's about the preservation. I'm sure that resonates quite well with a lot of these established small business owners that, you know, feel that it's you're leading with your heart and some sort of more social impactful plan than just how much money can I make from this.
I think the big thing with it is we know we're already looking at profitable businesses because we only touch profitable businesses. So any of the businesses that we are looking at as a bit of a base rate, we're looking for gross profit margins in around 65%. We're looking for net profit margins that are probably 20 to 30%. So we know we are getting good, solid, profitable businesses. And we know that those businesses are doing well as they stand right now. So we can nearly set aside the money piece and we can put that on the back burner because we know it's a profitable business when we've went out to look at it. So we can more lead with the legacy piece, and we can lead more with, right, does this fit our portfolio? Is this a business I want to be associated with? A lot of the business owners that I have bought their business off will tell you that I am out checking out the business before I've bought it off them. In the physiotherapy business we're in today, I had been in and had physio. Friends and family had been in and had physio. I had been in the small group personal training classes. We're really looking to check that there is a sense of community in these businesses. And that's massive post-COVID. I don't know about you guys over in England, but over here in Belfast, like, we need community and we are craving community so much in our local businesses. And that is everything from our plumbing and heating company, where people have a loyalty to go back to the same plumbing and heating engineer that they have for years before, to a small group personal training where there's a bit of crack and a bit of chat on the WhatsApp group at the weekend. We are really craving that. And I think that we're very lucky that we're in a position now where we can set aside the money aspect, and it has moved away from being about money to, okay, what are we actually building? What do we want life to look like in another 5 years? What can we do to give back? For instance, this weekend alone, we raised £2,400, £1,200 in one business, £1,200 in another for two separate charities. And I can't take any credit for it because the team did that in each of those businesses. I had absolutely nothing to do with it, rocked up and ate the sandwiches and did the workout in the small group personal training. The team get really behind it as well, and they really do become a part of it. And I think when you're leading with that, the money flows.
What a lovely culture you've built. That's no mean feat, Jenna.
It is really, really lovely. But at the same point, I don't think you can underestimate, we are so picky with the people that we hire. And when I say picky. I mean, the age-old premise, hire slow, fire fast, mm-hmm. is so true in all of my businesses. We are incredibly choosy, really strict hiring practices, and I interview every single staff member that we hire within the business. They are not getting into one of our businesses without final clearance from myself. Otherwise, this doesn't work. I need to have a serious amount of trust in the individuals that I hire, because I'm not on site in each business every day. So we can't afford for there to be any messing about. There has to be a really strong culture of loyalty, and there has to be a really hard work ethic out there. Otherwise, this just would not work.
I mean, grow the empire to more than the 11, and that recruiting might become a full-time job if you're going to interview every shortlisted candidate. That's impressive.
Yeah, we'll be looking for a recruitment agency very fast.
If you need to buy one of those next and outsource it, definitely. Or insource it, I suppose. So you're a big proponent of no money down in your deal structures. Has that been the reality for all the deals so far?
So the very first deal I did, I had absolutely no clue about no money down. Carl, my husband, and I had made a bit of money during COVID, and we had sort of sat back and thought, right, what are we actually going to do now? What are we going to do with this money? I often tell people my husband, God bless him, is absolutely fantastic, is really good at what he does, but is the biggest spender that you will ever meet. And Carl loves his toys, and there's jet skis, and there's boats, and there's all these weird and wonderful things that he has. And you can't leave money in the bank account too long. So I thought, right, what are we going to do with this? What are we going to do to invest it? And that's how we got into small business acquisitions in the first place. It mesmerized me that so many small business owners will use their money and invest into property whenever they already know how to run a business. So why would they learn a new skill set? Why would they not just buy small businesses and invest in that way? It baffles me still. Either I'm wrong on that or they're wrong on that, but in my head I'm definitely right on that.
It's a product of the timing, because like where I don't know what the housing market's like in Northern Ireland, but the yield now on property as an asset class is a lot less attractive than it was to our parents, who, you know, that was a no-brainer. They could make serious money owning a property portfolio. Now you'd make a much better yield on a small business, arguably.
Yeah, absolutely. And while I do appreciate, you know, it is an appreciating asset, absolutely. But, you know, use the money, buy a business, buy a cash flowing business, and then use the money to pop into property too whenever the market is a little bit different. You know, use multiple different investment strategies and have multiple different investment income streams. Sorry, we need to be smart. Life is definitely changing, and it's changing thick and fast, and it's only going to change faster with AI as well. So we need to be smart about it. But in terms of the sort of no money down strategy, the first deal I ever bought was a beauty salon. I paid £15,000 for it. I had no idea about no money down at that stage. I just had £15,000 spare that I could buy this business, and that's exactly what I did. And it was only then from that, whenever I bought that business and I really found a love for it, and I thought, you know, this is what I want to do, actually, more so than running the plumbing and heating company. I want to be doing this more full time. And I started then looking into small business acquisitions an awful lot more. And seller finance was the first form of no money down, I suppose you could say, that I came across. And I done a bit of digging on it, tried to find out a little bit more. And I remember phoning my solicitor at the time and saying, do you think I could buy a business in this way here? And he said to me, absolutely not. That is never going to take off. Good luck finding anyone.
Why is that always the advice? That I don't understand why so many solicitors caution against no money down or seller finance. I mean, it is a reality in certain types of business. So
interesting advice you got. It absolutely is. And I still laugh to this day, and I remind him of that quite often, that he told me that this would never work 8 businesses later. But it was then, whenever I started digging into that, that we got into bigger deals. And yes, while I can buy a barbershop, a beauty salon, a hairdresser's, for instance, for no money down, and absolutely I can, then whenever I was getting into the bigger deals, we were looking at, right, we do need some form of upfront money, especially if you're dealing with brokers. Brokers are going to want to see upfront money, and they can be a bit sneaky and not actually pass on your details to sellers often if you're not telling them that there's a bit of money upfront. And we started looking at, right, what other creative deals structures can we have here? And we have bought businesses in around the £250,000 mark now with no money down, using creative deal structures. There's so many ways that you can do it. The list is absolutely endless. You have just got to think outside of the box, and you cannot limit yourself to there's only one or two ways to do this, because there's not.
So have you been starting using leverage from banks and lenders like beyond the seller's finance now? Are you using loans?
So we have absolutely no bank loans still to this day,
Marvelous. Well
which
done.
is fantastic, really, really good. We have used investors, and we have brought two investors on the two separate deals. At the minute, we are looking at different ways that we can bring money into the business. So, getting loans based off the credit card payments and taking
Yeah, so
obviously
cash
percentages
flow
back from that.
finance stuff, yeah.
Absolutely.
Revenue
So
finance and stuff.
we're looking at different ways that we can do it. But the big thing is there is money out there to be had. There is money out there to be used, and people want to lend to you because that is ultimately how they make their money. It
Yep.
is just going out there and finding it and being creative with it.
Brilliant. Yeah, capital definitely wants to be allocated. And so
Absolutely.
we're a conduit for the right money going into the right deals, definitely. So how has the no money down where you have used it landed with the sellers? How have you managed to structure it in a way that they embrace?
So I suppose it really depends on each seller in particular, and it depends what they're actually looking to get out of their business. With people that I'm working with at the minute that are looking at buying businesses, they have put offers in of businesses at £250,000, and they have been full no money down deals. So again, mix of creative financing structures. And then we've had sellers come and say, yes, that's no problem, we'll take that £250,000. But you know what? If you just give us £50,000 cash, we'll also walk away with that. And we've again been able to use creative deal structures where we're not using the individual's own £50,000 to buy those businesses. And when you think about it, like buying a business at £50,000 versus £250,000, it's a huge, huge differentiation.
Massive.
Like that is a massive, massive change.
Just
So yeah,
can we
we've
double click on that a bit? Why would they volunteer to take 50K when there's 250K in the deal structure on the table?
So for those particular people, they wanted to get out faster. So they didn't want to be waiting on the money coming in slowly, sort of drip feeding over 3 years. They just wanted to get out. They were relocating and they wanted to move abroad, and they were happy taking the 50K and going.
Nice. Yeah, and I guess where you're offering in those different structures, it's for them to decide, I guess, ultimately, if they want less money but sooner or more money over a longer time. Yeah,
And
great
that's
stuff.
exactly it. It's knowing your seller, and putting multiple offers on the table to get a feel for what the seller actually wants
Yeah.
or what they actually need. And again, we are doing small business acquisitions. So the deals that we're looking at the minute, nothing has went above £250,000 in terms of an acquisition. And that is different to what, people working on larger M&A deals are looking at. So, if you're looking at the research out there, or you're looking at articles, or you're speaking to people in the M&A space, very often they can say, absolute nonsense, no way, that doesn't work, that's not happening. And yeah, we're sitting here saying, this is actually happening, we're doing it right now. And I
Yep.
think we do need to be more open-minded to the fact that we can do these creative deal structures. And it's also not always what the professionals tell you. Don't always get sidelined with my M&A professional said this, my solicitor said this, my accountant said this, because ultimately you as the person that's acquiring this business, you as the individual that is going to be responsible for this business, you as the individual having the off-the-cuff conversations with the seller, know often more than what those individuals do. Yes, we need to take their information and we need to, make informed decisions with it. But the buck stops with you, and you need to decide then what way you're going to go forward with it.
Absolutely. There is no cast iron set in stone rule or even a handbook, I mean, that works for every single deal. Every deal's different, every set of conditions is unique to the business in question. And yeah, you've got to plow your own furrow and find what works for you. So more power to you for doing that. Let's talk sourcing, can we, Jenna? You mentioned brokers there a little while ago, and I obviously assumed that you've now got a fair bit of a busy inbox with people saying, "Hey, Jenna, I want to come buy my business." When you were first setting out, where were you looking? How are you finding these businesses to buy?
So the very first deal we ever did, I actually found an accountant had put it up on Instagram. And that is the first deal that we ever found, and the first business that we actually bought, hilariously. Since then, we've bought businesses from a range of different places. So we've actually seen them up for sale on property sites, We have seen them on broker sites. We've seen them on the likes of businessesforsale.com. But then we've also found an awful lot through individuals now coming to us where we have put ourselves out publicly and getting a bit more of a name. I always find it really funny. We have a Facebook page here called NI Business in Northern Ireland. And my husband just finds it absolutely hilarious that the second someone puts up that they are selling their business, there will be a raft of people tagging myself. This nuts. He's like, why? How the hell do these people know about you? Do you know them? And I'm like, I have absolutely no idea who they are. Absolutely no idea.
You're not the only person buying small businesses in Northern Ireland. So,
well, apparently I am, and we're not going to tell them any different because I like getting 10 plus a day into my inbox. So I'll leave it at that for now.
That is a menu of choice. That is, yeah. You can be very specific about what you want if you've got that kind of deal flow.
Absolutely. But it is about building up your deal flow, and it's about not forgetting. Deal flow is very like marketing. You'll often find within a business, people are focused on social media, organic social media and organic paid ads. Deal flow is exactly the same. People will just look at the likes of businessesforsale.com, BizBuySell, Dalton's Business, whatever it is, and they'll just focus on that. But there's so much else goes into marketing, and there's so much else goes into deal flow. You know, don't forget to stick the sign above your window. Don't forget to go out with your flyers and do your flyer drops. It's exactly the same with your deal flow. Don't forget to actually be that walking billboard and tell people what you're looking for. The amount of people that have done our Business Buying Blueprint have been on a golf course, have just chatted to the individual that they're playing around a golf with and said, oh yeah, I'm interested in buying a business, but you know, like, it has to be going a few years and the staff have to be willing to stay at it because I don't want to be buying a job and I want it to be profitable. And then the next thing, they've X, Y, and Z phone numbers in their phone with individuals that have told their friend that they want to sell their business. So you have to think of your deal flow as not just one route, and you have to think like your sales funnel. How am I bringing this in from a range of different sources?
Beautiful. Yeah, that multifaceted sourcing strategy is gold, because like you say, people just over-index on one channel and wonder why it's crickets or they're not getting the kind of businesses that they want. Have you seen an uptick or an increase in the amount of businesses for sale over the last sort of, you know, since you started looking? Maybe, you know, we see the things that we are more alert to, but could you honestly say whether there is more choice now than there was maybe when you started in 2021?
Yeah, massively. I would have said, especially here in Belfast, you know, we have 70,000 micro businesses. So anything with under 10 employees in the north of Ireland alone. Now that figure was as of, I think it was March 2022, that figure was out. But that's the kind of scope that we're dealing with here. So if we have that in the north of Ireland, please best believe elsewhere, there is a hell of a lot more. At one stage, we actually started looking further afield. So we started looking down into Dublin and beyond because we thought, oh, the pipeline is drying up a little bit here. But we do find that there are surges, and then we do find that people pull back a little bit and then they sort of come back into the equation again, just like marketing. So I think that's always something to be definitely mindful of, but there definitely is more for sale out there now than what there would have been 3 or 4 years ago. And people are also being creative about how they actually advertise their business for sale. We are very much a word of mouth community here. Very private individuals. You know, my dad is still of the generation that you don't put things on social media. You don't let your left hand know what your right hand's doing is a very famous saying in my family household. So we do have individuals that would not put their business up for sale online, even if it is confidential. It will just be a private sale and a sort of off the cuff conversation. Even at the weekend there, I had a lady contact me about her business. She wants a quick sale. Business is profitable. It meets all of our thresholds. It's actually a very well-known business here in Belfast. And she just has a fear of putting it out publicly that the business is for sale in case the staff find out or in case anything sort of goes wrong. And she just wants a quiet sale. So I would say for anybody that is interested in this, do put yourself out publicly. Do let people know. Even if it is just on the golf course or playing a game of paddle at the weekend, whatever it is, let people know what you're looking for, because you will find then people will start bringing them to you. And that obviously is very nice that you're not having to spend a lot of your time sourcing.
Yes, it is. Although it creates some sort of obligation to respond to all of them, which may be a bit, you need to hire for. So I want to get into the Business Buyer's Blueprint, but just before we do, you know, it would be wrong to think that it's always been up and to the right and everything's been rosy and there's been no kind of challenges and obstacles along the way. You mentioned obviously the unexpected illness or condition of your daughter, but what else, what other challenges has life thrown at you over the last 4 or 5 years while you've been on this acquisition journey?
Yes, and do you know what? I love that you asked that because I think too many people out there make it to be extremely rosy and everything just goes smooth sailing because it absolutely doesn't. A couple of years ago, I was actually diagnosed with Graves' disease, and that threw a major spanner in the works. And I firmly, firmly believe if that hadn't have happened and I hadn't have sort of taken a year step back and not going at the pace that I previously was, we would have a hell of a lot more businesses than what we do now. So it's a bit frustrating, but I've had to make peace with it. But when you are then battling your own medical condition, plus then battling a child with a really serious disability and you know a hefty amount of time spent in hospital and a hefty amount of time spent on the care for her, that is hard, and that is something that you have weeks where mentally it's just really, really tough. And I have had to spend a lot of time prioritizing myself and that of my family. You know, we have firm rules in our house of set days of the week that we don't do anything else, that we spend time together as a family, you know, dedicated phone off time that we can really have that one-on-one time with the kids and have that one-on-one time with each other, because you can forget about each other. And we really firmly built this portfolio of businesses to give us a fantastic lifestyle, which thankfully it has. But also don't want to lose my husband in the process of that, and don't want to lose time with my kids in the process of that, which you could get swept up and you could do. So yeah, thankfully out the other side of that medical condition, but you know, that's something that I will have for life and I'm always going to have to juggle. So have to be very careful, you know, make sure I eat well, make sure I train regularly, make sure I get that downtime. And then we did have one business that we really, really massively struggled with. I make no qualms on social media that I focus on service-based businesses. But I did. I got swept up and I bought a product-based business, and that was our bridal boutique, and that was hard. We still have it to this day, and I firmly, firmly believe it will be the business that tests me constantly. And that sounds hilarious when I say my hardest business is a bridal boutique. Like when you
Not at
think of
all.
that, it's ridiculous. Like the concept is insane, but it is an extremely tough industry, an extremely tough industry. And it is the one that has most definitely tested me in terms of marketing, in terms of getting bums on seats, in terms of getting the name out there, the brand awareness, the cash flow. It has tested me in every area of having a business, and there's been some sleepless nights with that one. It broke all of the rules. It didn't meet any of the rules whenever we were buying it. And yeah, I probably did get a little bit swept up being female and it being bridal, and I thought this is going to be really lovely and this is going to be really fun. But it is important to know what your rules are and to firmly stick with it.
It's a discipline, and obviously you've now got a living reminder of what happens when you depart from your thesis.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, hats off to you for entering a very challenging market. But testament to you for turning it around and keeping it in the portfolio and keeping it going and thriving. So well done. Let's get into the business buyer's blueprint. What inspired you, in addition to managing, a growing family, owning eight businesses, continuing to search for more, what led you to want to put out there this community and opportunity for future business buyers?
I think for me, whenever I sort of fell into this industry, there wasn't anything out there. There wasn't sort of somewhere that I could go that was UK, Ireland based, that knew the market as it stood here, in the UK and Ireland. And that really frustrated me. You know, I nearly wanted somewhere to go that I could just take something and plug and play it. I very much respect the time and the understanding of other people. I have mentors that I go to that are far ahead of the game in comparison to myself. And I will never underestimate paying those individuals for them to fast track me through a process. Why would I not leverage the time and the experience of other people to fast track through a problem than, you know, the way I have and lost X amount of time in the bridal boutique? And whenever I looked for something, there wasn't anything here, and I found that really frustrating. And I thought, well, maybe we should potentially look at building out something. We'll see if there ever is a demand or a market for it. And slowly over time, people kept coming and saying to me, you know, would you show me how to do this? Can you help me do that? And that was, you know, on LinkedIn, that was on Instagram, that was, you know, word of mouth, individuals coming to me. And I suppose I'd done it for so long, just helping people, meeting up for a coffee, giving them advice and guidance. And then individuals would take that advice and guidance, go off, but they would only get so far again. And then they might just actually not proceed with the deal. They might drop off. Or they were then, you know, saying that, oh, I've met with Jenna, Jenna's told me how to do this, but then they pulled out of a deal and it nearly reflected badly on me. And I thought, you know what, we need to build something to show people exactly how to do this. And when I decided to build it, I did not want it to be a one day equivalent to studying for your theory test and your driving test. I didn't want it to be that, because the reality is every deal is different. You're going to come across scenarios in every deal that are going to be strange, are going to be startling, are going to be a little bit new that you didn't have in the last one. And I thought, right, we need to be with people from the start of this journey right up to the day that we sign for their business. And that's what we decided to build. So we have the sort of theory angle where we do like 60 to 90 minutes with people and we show them everything that they need to know. We teach them what they need to know about M&A. And, you know, where do you find the businesses? How do you read a set of accounts? How do you construct a deal? How do you value a business? What due diligence needs to be done? We do all of that with them. We give them all the tools and resources that they're going to need. So, you know, that might be a 300 line due diligence doc. That might be a valuation tool for a business. But then we stick with those individuals up until the day that they sign for a business. And I am fully there working one-to-one with them. It is just myself. And I stick with them to make sure they get the deal over the line.
Fabulous. And does it lead to any co-investment opportunities for you, or are you deliberately kind of, you know, Chinese walling yourself because it's hard once you get into one in the community? You kind of, you know, you have to make a conscious decision as to whether you're going to do it or not. But has it led to, or was it ever set up with the intention to create co-investment opportunities, or are you just giving back?
Just giving back. So I suppose for me right now, my big thing is, if I can show you how to do a no money down deal, why are you going to give me a percentage of your business? Nor do I want it. I want people to go out and build an incredible lifestyle for themselves the way we have. You know, my husband and I count ourselves very lucky and very privileged. We have 3 kids in private education. We have a house with no mortgage. We live a really comfortable, lovely life. And it is not about having a Ferrari in the front driveway, although I wouldn't put it past Carl at this stage. She's got a boat and a jet ski, so we might as well add a Ferrari to the collection. But it was never about that. It was about being comfortable, not struggling, and living a lovely lifestyle, eating good food, drinking good wine. It was more for that experiential thing, and I want that for other people.
That's amazing. And yes, you wouldn't be the first to have taken stakes in the community source deal flow, but it's credit to you that you have not done it for that reason. So you have mentioned, I think, quite publicly that small business acquisitions are becoming more accessible and attractive to first-time entrepreneurs. I'm really intrigued by that because I think the same, but I'm wondering if we're coming at it from the same angle. So tell me what made you think that way and where you see it going.
I think the reality is, if you can think of individuals that you went to school with, you will know of some individuals that didn't go down the university route. They maybe went to college, they learned to trade, they were really good at their trade. That could have been a hairdresser, a barber, a plumbing and heating engineer, a joiner, whatever it was. And they became really good at a trade. And ultimately, one day they decided, well, naturally, I'm really good at this. So why would I earn money for someone else? I might as well set up my own business. And that's something that we see in the UK and Ireland a lot. People sort of reach a stage that they think that the natural progression is A, to become a line manager, followed by B, to become a business owner. And when you think of those individuals, they have really solid businesses that have made really good profit. I always refer to it as sort of stealth wealth. They were nearly the individuals that you went to school with that had a caravan in a lovely part of the world. And they've done really well out of those businesses. If they have been able to set those up, they had no business experience, they knew absolutely nothing about doing that, why can you not go in and buy those businesses? There is absolutely no reason. And I think we really need to squash this scary world of M&A and bring it right back to what it is. It is buying a business. It is buying something that somebody else has already created and established that is making the money, is, you know, a cash flow business. There's no reason why you can't pick it up. You just need to learn how to do it, just like they learned how to run a business.
Yeah, and it's baffling that people have more confidence generally to go and start something from scratch than they do necessarily to go and pick up something that's already proven that might have a natural need to pass on the baton to somebody else. It's often confidence rather than a competence thing. There's many people I know that are entrepreneurs who've gone the 0-1 route that would make excellent acquirers of established businesses. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that you feel that it's becoming more accessible. Do you think the tools or the structuring or the finance, has other things conspired to make it more accessible?
I think there's so much more out there now that allows you to actually get into acquisitions. If we look at startups, for instance, for such a long time, there were loans for startup businesses that you could actually get going. But, you know, here in Belfast, if you want to, say, start up a hairdresser's, for instance, it's going to take you anywhere between £40,000 and £70,000 to kit out a hairdresser's. And accessibility to loans to do that is so much more readily available now, which is great. But why would you start that up when you could acquire a business that already has the clientele there? So yeah, I think acquisitions pretty much are for everybody out there. But in terms of, you know, making this so much easier now to do, you know, you have individuals like myself, there's other people out there that show you how to do it. But you also have so many more funding routes now than what you maybe did 5 or 10 years ago. There's so much more money out there. Capital is out there for the taking. It's just being creative with it and working out then how am I going to structure this deal so that I can actually get going. But would I say, is it easier now than what it was 5 to 10 years ago? Controversially, yeah, I probably would say it's easier.
Yeah, albeit you're fishing in a pond that the traditional banks struggle to support well with M&A finance. But, you know, many of the high street banks are now back providing decent funding for acquisition of large businesses that are doing kind of million plus in EBITDA. But the availability of M&A funding for acquiring small businesses and micro businesses that are doing, you know, under $500,000 EBITDA is really difficult. So yeah, I guess sellers should be under no illusion that it's hard to structure a deal that, you know, brings money from heaven that gets you out the door, because, you know, the lenders aren't really lending to the micro businesses. Those are organically financed.
Absolutely. And this is where we have to look at things creatively. We cannot just limit ourselves to the high street banks. We cannot, again, let's bring it back to marketing. You cannot limit yourself to traditional marketing. You have to look at different avenues, different sources, and you have to think outside the box, and that is the only way it's going to work. But I think that is the biggest skill that you can bring as someone in the M&A space and someone that owns a business, is the ability to think outside of the box and to think through problems. And as an entrepreneur, that is a skill that you're going to have to learn really, really fast. I often say, in any of my businesses, the only time that I'm needed is the time that there's a problem. And at the time that it's a problem, it's often the most ridiculous things, because people just can't see outside of the box, and I need to step in and nearly bring it back down to basics
first,
sometimes.
First principles.
Things have gotten really complicated.
Yeah. I think the owner's obligation to bring order from chaos never goes away, frankly.
Never.
So. Yes, you get all the good escalations, all the good things that somebody else has failed to solve. But then that's why we do what we do. So let's look at the road ahead, if that's okay. I'm really interested in what's next. You've mentioned you've got another 3 or 4 deals that you want to get done this side of Christmas, which will be tremendous. And I wish you the best with that. But if we fast forward to this time next year, autumn 2026, what do you hope the FIA investments looks like, or FIA investments look like? How do I pronounce it, by the way?
FIA. For the woman that says the word creative so much, I am probably the least creative person that you will ever find. Sophia literally stands for my children's names, Freddie, Isabella, and Annie, FIA. Hilarious. There was obviously a lot of time went into that one, Garth, trying to work out the name of that investment company. We are looking at what the future actually looks like. I have my sights firmly set on somewhere abroad that I would like to acquire a business. So we are tackling that in Q1 of 2026, which is very exciting. So that's definitely on the cards for next year. And we will definitely have a business in that region, which is very exciting. In terms of growth, you know, it is my ultimate aim in the next 10 years that this will be a 45 million plus turnover per year business. That is firmly up there, and you can sort of work back what EBITDA we'd like from that, given that we like to hit with that sort of 20-30% net profit margin. But that's where the sights are in terms of a long-term strategy inside the next 10 years. That's what we're going for.
Amazing. Oh, very exciting journey. And actually, I think exponentially will quicken. So if entrepreneurs, small businesses, people that want to learn about the acquisition journey want to contact you, how's best to do so?
Yeah, so you can follow me over on Instagram. My name there is just Jenna Hill Official. You can follow me there. If you want to keep track of the companies that are acquiring, you can check out the Fee Investment page as well. Also, obviously, online, the websites are there. And I suppose TikTok is definitely where we're bigger right now. But yeah, do reach out. If anyone has any questions or queries, they're interested in the industry as a whole, my diary is always open, always more than happy to take calls and help anybody on their journey. But yeah, I suppose my biggest parting bit of wisdom is always going to be nothing's going to change if you don't change. And life as we know it right now is changing so fast. And I think we've got to be ballsy. We've got to take risks, albeit I make no qualms that I am a very risk-averse person. You know, things need to be very well thought out and thought through. I do have three little kids at home that need their mum, and need her to be mentally well and not have lost her sanity with the volume of businesses that I buy. So, I'm very thoughtful with the stuff that I do, and I do think things out. But we still have to take risks, and we still have to try new things, and we still have to give things a go. And the world is changing, and goodness only knows where we're going to be in another 12 months' time.
Here. No, calculated risks are definitely the game that we're in, and but no risk, no reward, right?
Absolutely.
So and I'm super impressed that you still have time in your diary to make available to people that might want to reach out and have a conversation, because it sounds like you have to clone yourself these days with all these responsibilities. But well done.
No,
So
thank you.
no, my pleasure. Jenna, look, it's been an absolutely inspiring chat. I'm sure this will light a rocket under many of the finance bros that are buried in their spreadsheets and their lender conversations. And to learn that you were acquiring multiple businesses whilst you've been juggling three kids, and that you've got eight under your belt within a short space of time, 4 years, like, wow. Well done. So I'm absolutely personally honored to have been able to hear about your journey, and I'm really excited to sort of chart your continued success. So please, let's keep in contact, and yes,
Absolutely.
keep us updated on the next ones that you bring into the group.
I will. Thank you so much, and thank you so much for having me. It's a real honor. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks. So we wish you well, and listeners, tune in next time for another interview with another inspiring acquisition entrepreneur. But for now, keep on crunching.